Good morning, everybody. It's 9 o'clock on Sunday. Justin and I are here again. Welcome to Turning Towards Life. We are ever grateful for this space and this ritual that we have on Sunday mornings. And welcome here if this is your first time listening to us. And welcome back if you're back again. We have a beautiful poem to read together this week. And we, I think, are both really up for the grapple, I would say, with this. Like, some things feel obvious and other things feel like they may be just born because of conversation, so it feels really exciting. So Justin, do you want to say morning before we read?
I do. I just want to say good morning. Lizzie's said it all. I'm particularly mindful that people are joining us week by week, so I want to add my voice of welcome to everyone. Right. If you've just joined in with this project, we're so glad that you're here. And I had a really lovely experience this week of running one of our Third Space programs and chatting to some of the people who were on the program. We had a really extraordinary group for a couple of days earlier this week of wise, deep, open people. And we got into a very fabulous conversation. And a few people said, oh, we've been listening in and have been part of this for weeks and weeks, which I had no idea. And that was great. I was very excited that that's the way that this is going. And glad that we're here, glad that you're here whenever it is that you're listening to us. And I'm excited about this poem, which has been something that we've been grappling with. It seems to me it's got a lot to say and it's not all straightforward, which is one of the great gifts of it, that there's a lot for us to learn by talking about it.
So shall I read first, Justin?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. So, as we read, maybe it's a suggestion that, you know, Justin, you and anybody else who's listening, maybe just take a few breaths and see what it is to receive this in all its newness, because we would have read this before, and I wonder what it would be like to feel like we're reading it for the first time or hearing it read to us for the first time, which maybe we are. A ritual to read to each other. By William Stafford. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood storming out to play through the broken dike. And as elephants parade, holding each elephant's tail. But if one wonders, the circus won't find the park. I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs, but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep.
Thank you, Lizzie. I'm really glad you invited us to listen in that way. It was different for me. I don't think I've ever heard anyone read this poem. Mm. I've read it. So I'm going to do the same. And once again, maybe for everyone who's listening, take up Lizzie's request, which is see what it's like to let this in, to soften yourself enough to let it reach you in whatever way it's going to reach you. This is a ritual to read to each other, which of course is what we're doing, by William Stafford. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood storming out to play through the broken dike. And as elephants parade, holding each elephant's tail, but if one wanders, the circus won't find the park. I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes, or no, or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep.
My goodness, I mean, the way this speaks to me is extraordinary. It feels like it points to so much in the world of relationships, in the world of what it means to live this one's life, what it means to be aware of ourselves, to be aware of the broken dike through which stuff comes, and what that stuff is, awakeness, darkness. It's really, really beautiful. And just as poetry does, it kind of points to everything, but it isn't the thing.
Yes, it has this way that I think all really good poetry does of putting into language something that's really hard to put well into language. And if it was rendered obvious, wouldn't be the thing that needs to be talked about. Nevertheless, we have to do our best.
Yeah.
You and I.
Yeah. Such a beautiful invitation, isn't it, to kind of feel, for me, like feel the edges of what's being said and see what I can find in the centre.
So what are you finding so far, Lizzie?
Well, if I begin, I think I have to have some order to this. So at the beginning, for me, it speaks to, so there's a way that I think we kind of take on what the world thinks about things. And so we can have like communal judgment. And he points later to the word our mutual life. And for me, it's pointing into the ways that we kind of collude with each other about what's the appropriate thing to think about people, depending on what our kind of socioeconomic, cultural soup is that we particularly swim in. And so when he says a pattern that others made may prevail, it really strikes me that there are ways that I could always examine what's my feeling about something or someone, and that who knows, I could be following the wrong God home all the time because of the judgments that I have, because of the patterns that I believe in, because I've been told them without questioning them. And to know the kind of person that someone is always to see through the kind of habitual, like this happened to me so many times before, like I've taken somebody to be something, and then I ask them some questions, and then I get more in relationship with them, and I go, oh my goodness, I was so wrong, or I was so mistaken, and I was blinded by thinking that I knew the kind of person that they were, and actually I just didn't have a clue. I really didn't have a clue. And to always be practicing seeing beyond the assumptions that I make, or the learned habitual response to a certain kind of person that I have, feels like that's the, and I feel like this is the invitation with strangers, with people I already know, with people closest to me, like with everyone. And then the possibility that we may miss our star if we do this. You know, there might be something so purposeful and meaningful in a relationship or something that I steal from myself by allowing myself to only reside in the patterns that others made. And I love that inquiry. It feels such a big invitation.
I'm really touched by this way you have of pointing out, Lizzie, how easy it is for us to take up a position in our relationship with others that really is nothing to do with the other person at all.
Mm.
And that's why I find the first two lines so arresting, because there are so many different ways of reading them. If you don't know the kind of person I am and I don't know the kind of person you are, so then I have to stop and I have to say, okay, what is it to know the kind of person that I am and the kind of person that you are? And it seems to me from what you're saying and from what William Stafford is pointing us into is that the one way that we know one another is not anything to do with the kind of people we really are.
Mm.
It's to do with something that we got handed or yeah. something that we've been living in already, a sort of like a pre-existing narrative or understanding maybe of what people are in general or what you are in particular, because you spoke a particular way or you looked a particular way or I don't know, something you wore or some. And that the huge trap for us, I'm really moved hearing the way that you talk about it, that there is in the meeting of people with one another, there's very often a very deep kind of life-giving and practically important kind of possibility that can arise from it, which we can so easily miss.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I get from this poem, is that in a way, missing the possibility here is far easier than finding it.
Yeah.
And that so much of what has us miss one another is he doesn't say this directly, but this is what's coming to me, is the orientations and attitudes to people that we took up maybe from way, 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 way ago. Like, you remind me of that time that I can barely remember when I was very small, when I felt ashamed because I got in trouble. And this pattern that has already been made, that may have been made in my own life, or actually, as I'm speaking, it's also becoming clear to me, may have been made because of the history of how I and other people around me talk about people and treat people. Like, we've been making this history all the time. Then you come in to our orbit and all of a sudden I'm certain about you.
Mm.
And I'm not actually relating to this shadowy, remote, important region in you, the part that's hard, that's harder to get in contact with. I'm relating to the horrible errors of childhood, which are storming out, to take up his language, storming through. This is not you at all. And now we're in trouble in one way or another.
Mm.
And I think one of the reasons this is so hard for us is that, at least this seems true for me, particularly when I'm in a situation that feels difficult, that the move from let me be in contact with you, whatever you is,
mm-hmm.
I'll say, or let me be in contact with my own feeling afraid or my own wanting to be right, all of that, it actually only takes one person, one of us, to break the chain, to point ourselves in the wrong direction, and then to do this thing we do where we recruit everyone else to come with us. I must be right, so I'm going to, we'll all be right together.
Mm.
And there we are, heading off into the dark, pulling something apart,
mm-hmm.
to be put back together, destroying something that ought to be
mm-hmm.
Made. And that so much of our collective, so this is the thing about this poem, that this isn't just about what happens between you and me when we're talking, that what happens between you and me, particularly as we're each part of systems of people, constellations of people, that once any of us make a move to point off into the darkness and pull us away, we can very easily pull everyone away with us. And then we're all in this situation together where we're afraid and certain of ourselves and deeply, deeply missing the point, deeply missing what could happen here.
Yeah, Justin, I really want to just like pull out what I'm hearing you saying really clearly, which is that I feel like you're making the distinction between certainty and relating. And almost that in our certainty, it's impossible to be relating. And in our relating, it's impossible to be certain. And how a relating life, where we cultivate relating, feels like a whole different life than one where we are cultivating certainty. And that there's a thing about certainty that feels like it's more habitual. Like making the muscle of relating has a deep kind of vulnerability to it. And being certain keeps us safe and protected and familiar. And I'm really struck in this moment by these kind of two different kinds of invitations. And this whole way that you're also saying, like, a pattern that others made. We can be the others too. You know, like you were saying, we can lead people down the dark road by convincing people or having people get on our side or something. And this kind of radical self-questioning of our motivations and how we might be protecting ourselves by doing what we're doing is such a, yeah, I'm feeling like really wide-eyed. And like, whoa, this is a really big, like a really helpful small distinction that's massive between certainty and relating. What am I doing right now? Am I being certain about who you are and who I am? And or, you know, am I relating? And, you know, the bit the beginning asks, if you don't know who the kind of person I am and I don't know who you are, is a kind of a ships in the night feeling it gives me. And it also has me think, well, what is it to know the kind of person I am? Like, for me to know the kind of person I am, And what impact does it have if I'm relating to myself when I'm considering who are you and whether you know who I am? It's just kind of inviting me into this whole, well, what pattern have others made that I believe in about me? Not just about you.
Yes.
But all the ways that I've come to know myself through others, which of course is when we're born is the only way we can. And as we grow, know ourselves is through the eyes of others and who those others are and how they were with us, how they are with us, continually reaffirming the otherness of who I am, as in the other, the patterns that others made being the way I define myself. We may miss ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, if I were just to follow the patterns that others made about who I am, then I may miss my star because I'm following the God home that is actually not my God, but the God that others made, i.e. what I should be in the world, who I should be, what I should be achieving, what I should have, who I should be with, what I should be doing with this precious life of mine. And to follow that God home, i.e. the shoulds and the ought tos and the musts and the cultural pressure to do certain things, I may miss my star.
This it's a beautiful and really clear distinction you make between certainty and relating.
Mm.
And that we've been talking about this lots on and off in these months that we've been having these conversations, Lizzie, that certainty when it comes to other people, our relationship to other people and to ourselves. This is this point that you're making, keeps us in this very narrow place.
Mm.
And it struck me whilst you were talking about it that any, if there's a God worth following home, it's not going to be a God which can be easily understood. That any God who is a God, so tricky language here, but this is really, we can find out usually that we're on the wrong track when we've, when we're following what is an idol.
Yeah.
An idol is something that we rely on to give us the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I follow an idol, it'll give me everything that I want. Whereas to follow a God or God is to release ourselves into something that's far more important and far more mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now that you've brought this in, this distinction between relation, being in relationship and uncertainty, and you've been talking about the way you have, I'm very struck by the second verse. For there's many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug mm-hmm. that lets the fragile sequence break and lets out all of the horrible errors of childhood into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got, boy, do I know this mm-hmm. in myself, which is
yeah,
the moment when, and I usually don't spot it, the moment when somehow what I do inside is go, you know, like, I'm not going to do the work that's called for here. I'm just going to shrug and let it pass that what I'm now doing is being right
mm.
about myself. And this, exactly as you say, this kind of person which misses my own depth and humanity and mysteriousness, and about you. I just have got you buttoned down, Lizzie.
Mm.
And I so often can feel that moment that the shrug is a kind of betrayal.
Mm.
It's a betrayal of me and it's a betrayal of you, and it has a bodily sensation and I know it. And part of the trouble is that he doesn't talk about here directly, is that there's lots of shame in it.
Yeah.
It's usually shame and anger and fear. And once we're disconnected like this,
mm.
we have this possibility of being open to one another. It's what mm. Martin Buber would call being an IU relationship.
Mm.
And then it's so easy to shrug and we are broken. And the terrible thing about this is not only how we get broken apart from one another in our certainty and then move back into, as you said, missing one another,
mm.
but that our awakeness to one another is so fragile and tenuous. There are so many forces working against it that it often only takes one of us to do this and then other people follow. We recruit each other into this.
Yeah.
It's important that awake people be awake, because a breaking line can discourage us back to sleep. And that tiny moment of what he calls a shrug, that tiny inner moment of turning away,
mm.
which I think is what he means here, where we turn away from ourselves and we turn away from the other person because it keeps us safe or it keeps us right. It can feel so small.
Mm.
And it's the moment at which potentially everything is lost. The consequence of it is everything is lost.
Mm.
And then we spiral into the kind of certainties about one another.
Mm.
So anyway, I'm making a big point about this, because I think it's easy to say, well, you know, obviously we should just listen to one another and be respectful of one another and be open to one another. But there's a real subtlety here about the inner move that we make, or the inner mm-hmm. shift of orientation that we make that begins this.
Yeah. And Justin, I'm really appreciating you bringing the second paragraph in when you did, because it's also having me feel it differently too. And I'm also seeing and feeling this. So maybe there's a way that the small betrayal relates to the patterns that others made as well. So it's like when we betray the patterns that others made because of what's happening, you know, something triggers us or whatever, that sequence breaks And out comes the shouts of horrible errors of childhood. And it feels like William Stafford is articulating the break in the dike in a way that, of course, as human life, as we relate, there is going to be things that arrive out through the dike in the interactions, like you're saying, like something happens. And I'm feeling the invitation, given the first paragraph, to look at how I'm relating to when the dike breaks. You know, the way that we could say, for example, you know, when the dike breaks and I feel shameful and my errors of childhood come up, that there's something horribly wrong here, that I'm doing something wrong, that I'm turning away from something that I should be turning towards, when actual fact, it is possible that the world is doing what it's doing in order for those dikes to break so that we can examine and be relating to ourselves rather than having a fixed idea about what's right and what's wrong and what the process should be like of being in relationship with my wife or my husband or my kids or something, or what's the kind of person that I should be. So I'm feeling this kind of, in each small betrayal, there also is this the opportunity, the deeper relating to what is coming through the dike, that gives me a deeper insight and contactfulness with what's being held back by the dike. I mean, I think a dike is a holding back thing, isn't it? Like a dam or something.
Yeah.
And how often those horrible errors of childhood come storming out to play with all of us. Anyway who lives with someone or has contact with other people or an animal or, you know, anything, it's like, or has to go anywhere and even not go anywhere. Like, it just feels like it's really human that there is this underlying things happening all the time with us. There are all these layers of our consciousness, of our experience and our trauma and our difficulties and our history. And so then as the dike gets broken because of how William Stafford says a betrayal, any small betrayal. And then he comes back into the third paragraph, which is about the elephants holding each other's tails and how it feels to me like he's pointing to the connection between us all, like we're all holding each other's tails. And in this moment, I'm feeling like, just as you said, Justin, it just takes one of us to relate to the broken dike in a certain way, that then someone else might relate to the dike being broken in a different way too. So that then the broken dike isn't only a broken dike, it's like seeing what's behind the broken dike. That we can allow life to express itself through us, whatever that might be, and have the kind of presence that can welcome and turn towards everything that's behind the dike and be okay and be in relationship and relating this to one another in feeling into experiencing, allowing the broken dike to be open and broken and see what's here. And then I feel like, oh, so then that relates to the shadowy thing. Of course, like behind the dike is shadowy, isn't it? Because the dike is like certainty. And of course, like this is my trail in my mind, and I realize there's all these different kinds of interpretations, but it's kind of becoming alive to me.
Well, one of the ways I'm making sense of what you're saying is, and if this is what you mean, there's a moment in any conversation or in any relationship where this shrug can happen, where we find ourselves betraying ourselves or betraying the other or feeling betrayed. And this is the point at which what's being held back, the horrible errors of childhood, our traumas, whatever, can start to break out. And then there are two ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
So one way to go is, now I'm on the train of shame and fear and certainty and outrage and everything, is to fix ourselves there, like I'm right, because something got triggered here. But another way to go, which I really appreciate the compassion that you're bringing to this and the way that you're talking about it, another way is, that's the moment that we have a choice. It's not that we can be in relationship and expect not to bump up against, not to encounter our own woundedness and our own difficulty and our own prejudices and our own judgments.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, what happens when, what do you do when you find that you're in that position? And I know for myself, and I have done this so many times, and it breaks so much. It's such an easy way to break relationship, is to go, because I'm feeling all of these powerful things, I don't even know what they are, but I'm damned well right and you are wrong, that now I'm going to stay on that train until everything's smashed up, and then somehow I'll feel better, but I won't. But the other point, the other moment to go, like you say, is to appeal to the part of us that isn't so certain, that isn't caught up in all of that. That's the moment for us to do. It's not to have to live some kind of relational life where we never get into trouble in ourselves or with one another. There's a beautiful idea in that comes from Judaism of the Hebrew word for it is teshuvah, which means to return. And that any moment has the possibility of returning, which is turning back into contact. Turning back is exactly what we're talking about, turning back into love. But of course, you only ever get to turn back when you find that you've turned away. You can't turn back unless you've turned away, and that this is what happens with all of us. And then here's the middle lines of the poem, bang in the middle. I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs, but not recognize the fact.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what this long arc of this conversation we're in also seems to me is about, is the absolute ethical necessity for us, if we're going to make a human life together that allows us to respond to the world and is deep and dignified, is that it's up to us to spot the moments when the thing happens that we find ourselves triggered or turned away, and that's the moment to practice being clear, and being clear about the darkness that surrounds us, and turning back towards one another. And that's, I'm so grateful that you brought it in this way, that moment of the break of the rupture in ourselves, between us, that's the critical moment where something deeply necessary in the world can happen, and we miss it. Part of our responsibility is to learn to pay attention enough that instead of missing it and leading each other on a trail out into the dark, we're able to go, uh-oh.
But also something deeply important is happening. Like, the happening that's coming through the break is the thing that's important.
Yes.
And then the relating to that. So you just said the difference between knowing and recognizing. And it feels like, as you say, Justin, this is like all of our conversations are kind of imbued with this. It's like there's knowing something's happening, and then there's recognizing it. And the recognition is gives us an opportunity. Like, we all know what's going on some small level probably, but to recognize what's going on and then relate to it compassionately and openly is really different than just, I know what's going on, I know what's going on, I know what's going on. That this kind of this, I'm really appreciating that he relates this recognition to cruelty, and how to not recognize has cruelty in it. So to not be self-reflective, to not be wondering what's going on with me, to not be watching with an eye of inquiry, how I'm responding, how I'm reacting, which I would call recognition of, you know, there's knowing and then there's recognition. And then the recognition is like, ah, I see my part in this. I can see what I'm doing. I can reflect on that and wonder and get curious. And that feels like a really bold connection to make in terms of that being the root of all cruelty. And I can see it really clearly as we're in this conversation, you know, to not watch ourselves and take our own place in how come things are this way does feel like cruelty, because we're just kind of inflicting ourselves on the world without reflecting, without taking our part in being an openness that the world requires.
Maybe noticing the time, so in a second you and I have to stop, but as William Stafford says, Lizzie, that this knowing but not recognizing, or even before that, not even knowing, but when we know and we don't respond, and we go back to sleep and we go, it's okay for me to treat myself and other people this way, is maybe the root of all cruelty.
Yeah.
So that every cruelty that human beings visit upon one another deliberately and unintentionally starts with this moment of not paying attention, or paying attention and not responding to what we find.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why Stafford's poem is so important is because is the easiest thing for us to do is to see it and let it go past.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing in the way that you says takes a great act of kindness and of courage, because it also implies that we might say right in the midst of the conversation, right after I've said to you something that is so certain and so misses you, that I might say, oops, look at what happened. Something happened in me.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that is.
Mm.
You have to be quite brave to do that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of helpful to have like a really good kind of relationship to having faith in our goodness. That if we could work on the premise that I am good, that I am whole, it might not be so frightening to recognize, and not only to know.
Yes.
And that we might be teachers of each other's goodness to one another, in seeing each other beyond the pattern that others may have made. Might also come full circle to allow us and give us permission to reflect and to recognize and say it's okay, it's safe.
Well, I think that's a really beautiful place to end with your reminder of
so great this
knowing our goodness. It is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in a couple of years we'll come back to it again.
Yes.
See what we have to say about it.
That would be really cool.
Well, thank you everybody so much for being with us this morning, or whenever you're joining us. We're really, really thrilled that this is possible, and we'll see you next week.
Bye everyone, see you next week.